学生英语在线，你想知道的问题你告诉他，你没想到的问题他告诉你。最顶尖的英语专家，最有效的学习方法，雅思托福 GRE 轻松得分没问题。 Question of the day， 大学生英语在线，每天上午6:30，晚上11:00，与您准时相约。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the day， 我是 Larry， 欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，下载更多的英语学习资料。我们的 QQ 群号码是11627447，欢迎加入。那今天呢，我们要讲的是 TED TED Talk， 因为又到了周末了哈。那么我们今天请来的专家老师是壮壮老师。
Hello.Yes, we're going to listen to a talk with the title A Plant's Eye View. 就是我们看世界的时候呢，从谁的角度去看呢？是植物的眼睛，这个视角去看。The speaker, Michael Pollan, is an environmental writer, is also the author of the Omnivore's Dilemma. 他写过一本书叫 Omnivore's Dilemma.那个 vore V-O-R-E 作为一个词缀，它是什么意思呢？就是吃的意思。比如说吃植物的就是草食动物叫 herbivore 啊，然后呢那个肉食类动物叫
carnivore。
那 omnivore 呢，你觉得是什么东西呢？
也是吃什么的。
omni 呢就是无所不能的，什么都有的。
哦，杂食，咱就是那个杂食动物。
咱就是杂食动物。
对，
话说我最近还真就听了这么一个小科普吧，算是讨论到底这个素食能不能维持一个人的健康。健美运动员他是完全靠素食，他也可以把这个肌肉练得非常有型有款。那我们一般想的就是蛋白质啊什么这些动物的东西呢好吸收，可是人家素食人家也练成那样。
素食是理论上是可以的，但是呢比较困难，就是说你营养得非常均衡。
没错，
因为特别是素食缺少一种维生素叫维生素 B12。
哦，
这个是在肉食里很丰富的，但是在素食里面是很少的。你只有补充很多这种谷类啊，才可能摄取到这种维生素。
怪不得呢，你看这个国外吧，他就吃这个叫 vitamin supplement 然后 one a day 就有这种标签，就叫 one a day， 就每天吃一片，什么维生素都给你补了，对吧？可是呢，药补不如食补。好，然后咱们再看呢，这个人写的这本书 Omnivore's Dilemma 这个 dilemma 大家知道什么意思吗？
就是哎呀，就是很难选择，左右为难啊。
左右为难啊，就是杂食动物的 dilemma。In which he explains how our food not only affects our health, but has far-reaching political, economic, and environmental implications. 这个我觉得好像是不是拔得太高了。在这本书里面呢，这个作者呢，就是说我们这个食物不光是对健康会有影响，并且呢，还有深远的政治、经济以及环境的影响。
这些也有关系啊。
这说起这个来，我就想到有一篇的托福听力呢，它是一个历史课，但是呢它就讨论的那个食物，比如说这个土豆啊，在爱尔兰曾经怎样的克服了这个饥荒啊，还有呢就是从北美洲安第斯山呢引进到欧洲的像这个 tomatoes 啊等等这些吃的东西。然后呢当时课上的学生就提一个问题，说老师咱们这又不是一个讲烹饪的课，对吧？咱们历史课这讲这吃的有什么关系呢？是不是这个政治到底和吃的东西有什么关系呢？ Larry 你自己你能想得出来吗？
有关系啊。你比如说这个，比如说在古代中国哈，如果呢这个民族它是以农耕为主的，比如说江南一带的，那么它一定会定居下来。它的政治方略一定是这种定居的这种
相关的制度
啊，
社会架构就都有了。
那如果你是游牧民族，你吃肉的，打猎的，那一定像蒙古一样啊，你的这个政治制度一定是不断的迁移的。
有道理。话说呢，这个托福的听力里边呢，他就说呢，因为这个农作物啊，它更加更加高效率的去喂养 人口是吧，有的农作物它就不行，它种着种着它微生物营养啊都不全了，所以引进了那种土豆之后呢，它就是使得更多的人能够存活，并且呢它种的这个地域也变化了，原来你就是靠天吃饭，必须得找那个水土特别合适的地儿，现在呢这个植物呢农作物的适应性大了，所以呢它就可以去到更冷的地方，所以呢它就导致了政权中心的迁移，这就和政治上挂上钩了。
对
啊，所以我觉得人家这个人写的这本书呢，谈到这个政治经济，看来还是很靠谱的。好，然后呢，那个 What if human consciousness isn't the end all and be all of Darwinism？ 他就提一个问题了，就是说人的这个知觉，并不是像达尔文所说的，要么就是什么都完结了，要么就是什么都成就了，那会是怎样的呢？所谓的 end all and be all。就是什么都完结，什么都能生长啊。What if we are all just pawns in corn's clever strategy game to rule the earth？ 啊，我们要是在这个玉米是吧，它的这个聪明的这个战略性的博弈之中，像这个玉米要统治世界，我们可能也就是一个战略上的小棋子呢。Arthur Michael Pollan Author Michael Pollan asks us to see the world from a plant's eye view.
哦、oh, ，
所以说呢，我们要从一个植物的视角去看待这个世界。
原来如此啊！
好，那我们先听一下这个录音。
I want to say a word for the soil and the bees, the plants and the animals, and tell you about a tool, a very simple tool that I have found. Although it's really nothing more than a literary conceit, it's not a technology, is very powerful for, I think, changing our relationship to the natural world and to the other species on whom we depend. And that tool is very simply looking at us and the world from the plant's or the animal's point of view. It's not my idea, other people have hit on it, but I've tried to take it to some new places. Let me tell you where I got it. Like a lot of my ideas, like a lot of the tools I use, I found it in the garden. I'm a very devoted gardener. And there was a day about 7 years ago, I was planting potatoes. It was the first week of May. This is New England, when the apple trees are just vibrating with bloom. They're just white clouds above. I was here planting my chunks, cutting up potatoes and planting it. And the bees were working on this tree.Bumblebees just making this thing vibrate. And one of the things I really like about gardening is that it doesn't take all your concentration. You really can't get hurt. It's not like woodworking. And you can, you have plenty of kind of mental space for speculation. And the question I asked myself that afternoon in the garden was, working alongside that bumblebee, was what did I and that bumblebee have in common? How was our role in this garden similar and different?And I realized we actually had quite a bit in common. Both of us were disseminating the genes of one species and not another. And both of us, probably, if I can imagine the bee's point of view, thought we were calling the shots. I had decided what kind of potato I wanted to plant. I'd picked my Yukon Gold or Yellowfin or whatever it was. And I had summoned those genes from a seed catalog across the country, brought it.And I was planting it. And that bee, no doubt, assumed that it had decided, I'm going for that apple tree, I'm going for that blossom, I'm going to get the nectar, and I'm going to leave. We have a grammar that suggests that's who we are, that we are sovereign subjects in nature, the bee as well as me. I plant the potatoes, I weed the garden, I domesticate the species. But that day it occurred to me, what if that grammaris nothing more than a self-serving conceit. Because, of course, the bee thinks he's in charge, or she's in charge, but we know better. We know that what's going on between the bee and that flower is that bee has been cleverly manipulated by that flower. And when I say manipulated, I'm talking about in a Darwinian sense, right? I mean, it has evolved a very specific set of traits, color, scent, flavor, pattern, that has lured that bee in. And the bee has been cleverly fooled into taking the nectar and also picking up some powder on its leg and going off to the next blossom. The bee is not calling the shots. And I realized then, I wasn't either. I had been seduced by that potato and not another into planting its, into spreading its genes, giving a little bit more habitat. And that's when I got the idea, which was, well, what would it be, what would happen if we kind of looked at us from this point of view of these other species who were working on us? And agriculture suddenly appeared to me not as an invention, not as a human technology, but as a co-evolutionary development in which a group of very clever species, mostly edible grasses, had exploited us, figured out how to get us to basically deforest the world, the competition of grasses, right? And suddenly everything looked different. And suddenly mowing the lawn that day was a completely different experience. I had thought always, and in fact had written this in my first book, this is a book about gardening, that lawns were nature under culture's boot, that they were totalitarian landscapes, and that when we mowed them, we were cruelly suppressing this species and never letting it set seed or die or have sex. And that's what the lawn was. But then I realized, no, this is exactly what the grasses want us to do. I'm a dupe. I'm a dupe of the lawns, whose goal in life is to outcompete the trees, who it competes with, who they compete with for sunlight. And so by getting us to mow the lawn, we keep the trees from coming back, which in New England happens very, very quickly. So I started looking at things this way and wrote a whole book about it called The Botany of Desire. And I realized that in the same way you can look at a flower and deduce all sorts of interesting things about the taste and the desires of bees, that they like sweetness, that they like this color and not that color, that they like symmetry. What could we find out about ourselves by doing the same thing? That a certain kind of potato, a certain kind of drug, a sativa, indica, cannabis cross has something to say about us, and that wouldn't this be kind of an interesting way to look at the world? Now, the test of any idea, I said it was a literary conceit, is what does it get us? And when you're talking about nature, which is really my subject as a writer, how does it meet the Aldo Leopold test, which is, does it make us better citizens of the biotic community? Get us to do things that leads to the support and perpetuation of the biota rather than its destruction. And I would submit that this idea does this. So let me go through what you gain when you look at the world this way, besides some, you know, entertaining insights about human desire. As an intellectual matter, looking at the world from other species' points of view helps us deal with this weird anomaly, which is intellectual, and this is in the realm of intellectual history. Thanks to Darwin, we figured out we are just one species among many. Evolution's working on us the same way it's working on all the others. We are acted upon as well as acting. We are really in the fiber of the fabric of life. But the weird thing is, we have not absorbed this lesson 150 years later. None of us really believes this. We are still Cartesians, the children of Descartes, who believe that subjectivity, consciousness, sets us apart, that the world is divided into subjects and objects, that there is nature on one side, culture on another. As soon as you start seeing things from the plant's point of view or the animal's point of view, you realize that the real literary conceit is that. Is this the idea that nature is opposed to culture? The idea that that consciousness is everything, and that's another very important thing it does. Looking at the world from other species' points of view is a cure for the disease of human self-importance. You suddenly realize that consciousness, which we value and we consider the crowning achievement of nature, human consciousness, is really just another set of tools for getting along in the world. And it's kind of natural that we would think it was the best tool, but, you know, there's a comedian who said, well, who's telling me that consciousness is so good and so important? Well, consciousness. So when you look at the plants, you realize that there are other tools, and they're just as interesting. I'll give you two examples. Also from the garden, lima beans. You know what a lima bean does when it's attacked by spider mites? It releases this volatile chemical that goes out into the world and summons another species of mite that comes in and attacks the spider mite defending the lima bean. So what plants have, while we have consciousness, tool-making, language, they have biochemistry. And they have perfected that to a degree far beyond we can imagine. And their complexity, their sophistication, is something to really marvel at. And I think it's really the scandal of the Human Genome Project. You know, we went into it thinking 40 or 50,000 human genes. And we came out with only 23,000. Just to give you grounds for comparison, rice, 35,000 genes. So who's the more sophisticated species? Well, we're all equally sophisticated. We've been evolving just as long, just along different paths. So cure for self-importance, way to sort of make us feel the Darwinian idea. And that's really what I do as a writer, as a storyteller, is try to make people kind of feel what we know and tell stories that actually help us think ecologically. Now, the other use of this is practical. And I'm going to take you to a farm right now. Because I used this idea to develop my understanding of the food system. And what I learned, in fact, is that we are all now being manipulated by corn. And the talk you heard about ethanol earlier today, to me, is the final triumph of corn over good sense. It is part of corn's scheme for world domination. And you will see, the amount of corn planted this year will be up dramatically from last year, and there will be that much more habitat because we've decided ethanol is going to help us. So it helped me understand industrial agriculture, which of course is a Cartesian system. It's based on this idea that we bend other species to our will, and that we are in charge, and that we create these factories, and we have these technological inputs, and we get the food out of it, or the fuel, or whatever we want. Let me take you to a very different kind of farm. This is a farm in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. I went looking for a farm where these ideas about looking at things from the species point of view are actually implemented. And I found it in a man, the farmer's name is Joel Salatin, and I spent a week as an apprentice on his farm. And I took away from this some of the most hopeful news about our relationship to nature that I've ever come across in 25 years of writing about nature. And that is this. The farm is called Polyface. Which means the idea is he's got six different species of animals as well as some plants growing in this very elaborate symbiotic arrangement. It's permaculture, those of you who know a little bit about this. Such that the cows and the pigs and the sheep and the turkeys and the what else does he have? All the six different species, rabbits actually, are all performing ecological services for one another, such that the manure of one is the lunch for the other, and they take care of pests for one another. And it's a very elaborate and beautiful dance, but I'm going to just give you a close-up on one piece of it. And that is the relationship between his cattle and his chickens, his laying hens. And I'll show you how, if you take this approach, what you get. Okay? And this is a lot more than growing food, as you'll see. This is a different way to think about nature and a way to get away from the zero-sum notion that the Cartesian idea that either nature's winning or we're winning and that for us to get what we want, nature is diminished. So, one day, cattle in a pen. The only technology involved here is this cheap electric fencing, relatively new, hooked to a car battery. Even I could carry a quarter-acre paddock, set it up in 15 minutes. Cows graze one day. They move, okay? They graze everything down, intensive grazing. He waits 3 days, and then we towed in something called the Eggmobile. The Eggmobile is a very rickety contraption. It looks like a prairie schooner made out of boards, but it houses 350 chickens. He tows this into the paddock 3 days later and opens the gangplank, turns them down, and 350 hens come streaming down the gangplank, clucking, gossiping as chickens will, and they make a beeline for the cow patties. And what they're doing is very interesting. They're digging through the cow patties for the maggots, the grub, the larva of flies. And the reason he's waited 3 days is because he knows that on the fourth day or the fifth day, those larvae will hatch, and he'll have a huge fly problem. But he waits that long to grow them as big and juicy and tasty as he can because they are the chicken's favorite form of protein. So the chickens do their kind of little break dance, and they're pushing around the manure to get at the grubs. And in the process, they're spreading the manure out. Very useful, second ecosystem service. And third, while they're in this paddock, they are, of course, defecating madly. And and their very nitrogenous manure is fertilizing this field. They then move out to the next one, and in the course of just a few weeks, the grass just enters this blaze of growth. And within 4 or 5 weeks, he can do it again. He can graze again, he can cut, he can bring in another species, like the lambs, or he can make hay for the winter. Now, I want you to just look really close up onto what's happened there. So it's a very productive system, and what I need to tell you is that on 100 acres, he gets 40,000 pounds of beef, 30,000 pounds of pork, 25,000 dozen eggs, 20,000 broilers, 1,000 turkeys, 1,000 rabbits, an immense amount of food. You know, you hear, can organic feed the world? Well, look how much food you can produce on 100 acres if you do this kind of, again, give each species what it wants. Let it realize its desires, its physiological distinctiveness. Put that in play. But look at it from the point of view of the grass now. What happens to the grass when you do this? When a ruminant grazes grass, the grass is cut from this height to this height. And it immediately does something very interesting. Any one of you who gardens knows that there's something called the root-shoot ratio, and plants need to keep the root mass in some rough balance with the leaf mass to be happy. So when they lose a lot of leaf mass, they shed roots. They kind of cauterize them, and the roots die. And the species in the soil go to work basically chewing through those roots, decomposing them, the earthworms, the fungi, the bacteria, and the result is new soil. This is how soil is created. It's created from the bottom up. This is how the prairies were built, the relationship between bison and grasses. And what I realized when I understood this, and if you ask Joel Salatin what he is, he'll tell you he's not a chicken farmer, he's not a sheep farmer, he's not a cattle rancher, he's a grass farmer. Because grass is really the keystone species of such a system, is that, if you think about it, this completely contradicts the tragic idea of nature we hold in our heads, which is that for us to get what we want, nature is diminished. More for us, less for nature. Here, all this food comes off this farm, and at the end of the season, there is actually more soil, more fertility, and more biodiversity. That's a remarkably hopeful thing to do. There are a lot of farmers doing this today. This is well beyond organic agriculture, which is still a Cartesian system, more or less. And what it tells you is that if you begin to take account of other species, take account of the soil, that even with nothing more than this perspectival idea, because there is no technology involved here except for those fences, which could be, you know, they're so cheap they could be all over Africa in no time, that you can, we can take the food we need from the earth and actually heal the earth in the process. This is a way to reanimate the world. And that's what's so exciting about this perspective. When we really begin to feel Darwin's insights in our bones, the things we can do with nothing more than these ideas are something to be very helpful about. Thank you very much.
好的，听完了这个演讲啊，我是很受启发呀。我现在换了一个视角来看这些植物了。
其实植物是相当厉害的哈。不过话说回来，就是在这个春天啊开花的时候，那天我就跟我爸聊天，他说好多人都在那个路边照那个花儿。是吧，那这不是开花吗，在那拿着手机拍照很正常。说呢有一个老头就说，这花有什么可照的呀，这只不过就是植物的生殖器。哎呀，这话一说的话大家很扫兴。
对，
本来这是很美妙的，结果很煞风景啊。其实可是一想呢，确实也就是这么回事儿。
对，
那么这一次的这个演讲呢，我觉得可以给大家开启一个新的思路和视角，那还有鼓励大家多听几遍啊。如果想获得我们听力回放的网址，请大家加入 QQ 群，我们的群号，
群的号码是11627447，欢迎您的加入，我们下期节目再见。
See you next time。
大学生英语在线，你想知道的问题你告诉他，你没想到的问题他告诉你，最顶尖的英语专家，最有效的学习方法，雅思托福 GRE 轻松得分没问题。 Question of the day， 大学生英语在线。 每天上午6:30，晚上11:00，与您准时相约。
真正的型男不一定来自选秀场，那里给不了你一身戎装。
真正的猛男不一定来自健身房，那里给不了你铁汉军魂。
真正的女神不一定全身名牌，也可以一身戎装。
真正的女神不一定来自秀场，
好，
也可以走进军营。
来当兵吧，在军营里遇见最美的自己。北京市热血新兵招募季现已全面展开，凡是驻京普通高校在校生、应届毕业生和具有北京市户籍高中毕业以上文化程度的适龄青年均可报名。查询相关政策请登录首都征兵网首页。
好，
世界上没有不受限制的自由，
就像你有吸烟的自由，但你不能自由的吸烟，还影响他人的健康。
2015年6月1日，北京市控制吸烟条例正式实施，届时室内公共场所、工作场所和公共交通工具内禁止吸烟。
为了更好的生活，控烟需要全社会行动起来。
讲文明树新风，北京人民广播电台公益广告。
The sparkle of a man.